when we think about the Crusades, everybody thinks about white horses, men in armor, and this kind of brave movement eastwards to go to secure and take hold of Jerusalem. And then the story of the Crusades from then becomes how are the Crusaders, how the Westerners able to provision their new settlements? What does society look like in the Middle East and in Palestine and in the Crusader states? You know, is that a kind of version of the West that's transplanted? Is this a form of colonialism? What kind of military pressures are there leading up to the recapture of Jerusalem, or the capture of Jerusalem, by, say, by Saladin in 1187? And then that story is quite a well-known furrow. And there are some brilliant scholars who work in that field. But essentially, it's about Western knights deposited into a Middle Eastern or Eastern Mediterranean context. And that comes as a great surprise from those of us who read sources from other parts of the world. You know, I remember when I was a young student, I remember thinking, well, I had the topic of the Crusades came up. And I thought, great, well, I sort of know the outline of the story, like I suspect many listeners do, of this great movement of people, mainly men, but not exclusively, heading out to the east, from a European context, the east anyway. And I assumed that that must mean that Jerusalem, which is captured by the Crusaders in 1099, must have fallen to the Muslims, you know, a few years beforehand. This is a response to a specific and cataclysmic event. But again, as it's worth reminding listeners, Jerusalem is captured by the Arab armies in the 630s. So that's 450 years earlier. So what do these sources tell us? Well, these sources tell us that the way in which we look at the Crusades is wrong, because it's not so simple to just put two and two together and say, look, there's a bunch of men for whom knightly piety, the role of the church, the disposition of what's happening in Western European society suddenly ignites. One needs to understand what's going on the ground. And by and large, for the last 300, 400, 500 years, most Crusade historians don't read Greek. They certainly don't read Armenian, Syriac, Hebrew, Arabic. And so these sources are a mystery, and they tend to be glossed over by either not being mentioned at all or being relegated into a kind of the soup of, you know, here's what everybody else is saying. Or worse, in the case of some sources, profoundly misunderstood. And the most important one of those is a text called the Alexiad by Anna Komnina, written in the middle of the 12th century. She was an eyewitness, lived through the Crusades, the daughter of the Byzantine emperor at the time. And largely because of the fact she's a woman, this text has been displaced as being, and described famously by Gibbon, as betraying the vanity of a female author on every page. And it isn't read in full. I mean, if you're lucky, it gets extracted. People will read 3 or 4 pages. And typically, it will be dismissed by almost exclusively male scholars of the Crusades. The Crusades is a classic lightning rod for men who like men in white horses and in armour. And to say, well, look, you can't trust what a woman says, and you certainly can't trust a woman who's writing about her father. And that tells me that they haven't read more than those 3 or 4 pages of a 500 or 600 page text. So these different sources allow us to reconstruct a chronology, a sequence of motivations, and a sequence of outcomes that make the Crusade look extremely different to that well-trodden story that we know in the West.